I'm interviewing today. My name is Mary Franklin and I'm at 21 Abbey Road on the 13th of January 2026. And with me is...
Martin Miles.
Thanks, Martin. Okay, so can we start off by you telling me how you came to live in Witney?
Well, I was actually born in Witney, in Woodstock Road in Witney. There was the Budley Nursing Home. It was a little bungalow. And I was born there with my twin brother in 1948. Sadly, it's been knocked down.
Okay, so you were a twin. And does your twin still live in?
No, sadly, my twin died in 2017 of bowel cancer. So very sad.
I'm sorry about that, Martin. So that's many years to have lived in this area. What changes are you aware of in Witney?
Well, like most people who've lived in Witney all their life, it's the houses. And I appreciate people have got to live in new houses, but it's the infrastructure of the roads, which is the most difficult bit for me as a cyclist. So I like Witney, but it's changed almost a bit too much from a little market town to a bustling market town.
So what do you appreciate most about it?
I still think it's a lovely place. When I go to the Midlands, Birmingham area, I come back and I realise that it's set in the middle of a lovely part of the country, that within 5 minutes on my bicycle I can be in the countryside, I can hear the birds, and it's just a lovely place to live. And on a positive, all our friends who come to Witney like it.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. Do you have anywhere in particular in Witney that you like to go to?
Not particularly. I tend to like leaving Witney, but I do like going down the Lees sometimes, because I used to be an avid cricketer, and so I sometimes go down the Lees and sit and watch the cricket from time to time. I'm also fortunate that I live opposite the cricket ground in Newland, so I used to watch from my bedroom window. So I would say perhaps if I'm going anywhere, it'd be on the cricket ground. But, mm-hmm. but my wife never comes with me because she can't stand cricket.
Okay. So do you think Witney has a sense of community still?
I think it does. Yeah, I think you read on social media people complain about things, but the underlying feeling that it does have a sense of community. And also, working in the museum, the people I've met from afar do say it seems like a nice, quiet town, as one couple from the Philippines said. So I think it does have a sense of community.
Yeah, it probably depends a bit, you know, where you come from and what you're used to. Yourself.
Well, it's easy to complain about the place you live in, but it's like going somewhere else and seeing, I wouldn't want to live here. So I still think it's a nice place.
Good. And what do you hope for Witney's future?
That they get the road sorted out. At least they're doing Shaw's Green at the moment.
And by sorting out, what do you mean?
So that you can move around the town a little bit. Because I have to go down Bridge Street, either drive or cycle, and it's the most dangerous road in Witney. And it's also the most polluted road in Witney as well. So I think that's what they need to get sorted out.
So sorting out as in taking the traffic out?
Yes, to a certain extent. And I think Shaw's Green will help.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Does that cover it, do you think?
It does. Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's go on to how you became involved with Witney Dramatic Society. So when would that have been?
Oh, I got involved with it in 1968, I remember very well, because I was 19 years old. And the reason being that my father was involved with it back in 1946, when it left the Corn Exchange in Witney, because it was during the war, it was the Corn Exchange Social Centre Dramatic Society, and then it became the Witney Amateur Dramatic Society in 1946. And Dad was one of the founding members. So there was always a hope one of my boys gets involved in the Dramatic Society.
And so who did he create that society with? Who were the other founder members?
There was a man called Raymond Yule. I've got some programmes done with his name on. And Pauline Wilsden Isabel, I'm not sure when Isabel Spencer came, but she came fairly soon after that. And there was Annette Orty, who, she was a lady who was the manager of the Trustee Savings Bank in Witney. And there was a lady called Peggy Wiltshire. Incidentally, they were all spinsters. And they sort of ran this triumvirate, ran the Dramatic Society. But it seemed to pull people in. And in those days, they did a lot. I mean, Raymond Yore used to write his own music and songs. And my dad used to sing them in some of the productions. So it was very fun. And I was very close to my dad, because my twin brother was closer to my mum and I was closer to my dad. And I know my dad always wanted me to get involved in it, because dad, not only was he a good actor, but he was very innovative in lighting and such like things like that. So I really admired him. So he was glad when I was getting out of my teenage years and getting into helping him in the Dramatic Society. So, yeah.
Okay. And so did you just go along with your... Had you been to performances?
Oh, I went to performances, yeah. Because my dad was absolutely brilliant as the Dame. I mean, he was just fantastic. Uh-huh. I've got a slide somewhere with a crack in it, somewhere at home, of my dad sitting dressed as the Dame. But he just used to do the most fantastic things. I remember... He was playing the Dame. He had an exploding iron and a collapsing ironing board. And this thing would suddenly collapse in the middle of the show. I just loved my dad doing that. But on the other hand, he could then play the inspector in Inspector Calls, the most serious part in the show. And he could do the things, sort of things. So I absolutely admired him. But there was a funny side to it, because on the last night of the pantomime, and I don't know if they still do it, something was... shall we say altered rather than sabotage, but something was altered. And Dad had devised, when he was playing the Dame, a system which had a bulb under your arm and tubes behind your ears to squirt water so it ran down his face to look as though he was crying. And on the last night of this particular performance, his friend Raymond Newell, who I talked about earlier, took the jets out and Dad squeezed the bottle and the jets went all over the pianist. Of course, the audience thought it was part of the show, so. But it was great.
And did your dad come up with those?
Oh, yeah,
things?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was all part of it.
My dad, he was so innovative, all the things he could think of. And I just admired him. It was a bit of hero worship, I have to say, with my dad. But sadly, he suffered from anxiety and depression a little bit, and then he tailed off as the years went on. So I think that's why he wanted me to get involved. But I just got involved on the technical side. So I did flats and painting, helped with the lighting a bit and sound sort of thing. But I did have a part in one play, and it was a bit embarrassing because I remember we had to come on at the end. And we all had to bow at the end of the show. And with all the bright lights, my mother said to me a bit later, I thought, I know she's all going a bit thin on top. So
so you declined
that. But, okay. But so my twin brother, it's okay to talk about twin brother in the context of the society. Philip got involved with the Dramatic Society, but on a minor sort of way, because he was a drummer. Because in our misspent youth, I played the bass guitar, my brother played the drums, and it was very good to have a drummer there as well. But there was one incident where he had the hots, and that's no two ways about it, for this young lady called Jackie, who used to leap on the stage in her fishnet tights, and she leapt on the stage once, and Philip actually stopped drumming, just looking at her like that. So, and we all laughed. But but it was fun.
Yes.
And it was a challenge as well, because if you were putting on a show, especially the pantomime, the amount of work that you had to put in every day. And
I can imagine. Yeah. So when would you start working on the pantomime?
Oh, well, the script must have been written in the autumn, and then, well, you must have started well into the autumn, because by the time December and January came round, you know, there were so many people doing, building sets, planning things, painting, so I wouldn't like to say an exact date, but it was probably 3 months.
So leading up to the performance in what, February?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I always admired Isabel, who was teaching English at Henry Butt School, and she was writing the script as well. And because she knew everybody, she knew everybody's talents, and they'd all been there. She could write a part for somebody, and she knew it would come off. She was absolutely fantastic like that.
It sounds as though she took on many roles in that society. Yeah. Can you remember what else she did other than... Did she write... Was it pantomime scripts or scripts for any type of play?
Yeah, she did pantomimes. We did do other plays during the year, but we often lost money on them because she didn't really have a big audience for us of a play sort of thing, which is a bit annoying because you put a lot of work in, but you didn't ever get the audience for it. So,
So she'd be writing the pantomime, and would she be involved in any other aspects of
that? Not as far as I know. No.
Okay.
She was a little bit of a dictator in some respects, but it was a good thing because you knew where you were with Isabel. She didn't dilly dally about. If she wanted something, she'd sort of tell you and make sure it was done, sort of thing. But
so, can you remember any examples of that? So, if she wanted something done, how would she go about it?
Oh, yeah. She wanted. There was in one show. She wanted a hole in a piece of scenery, and she wanted to put something behind it. And it was a bit of, you were seeing ahead. It was I don't really know what to call it, really, but she wanted to see ahead. And you'd see through the piece of scenery, and then you'd see what was behind it. And she kept pushing this. And Annette Aughty, one of the ladies in it, was involved. She says, just draw a picture on the piece of scenery, like a window, and I'll get somebody to draw things at a distance in it. She said, she won't notice. Because I think Isabel sometimes had big ideas and she wanted to, that was a really big idea, to do it that way. And then it would be interpreted as, it'll be okay from a distance. So.
Yes, yeah. And was she somebody who would have moved on to something else by then?
Oh, yes. If she changed her mind, you do something. She asked us to build a piece of scenery. It had to be a certain size, and you probably laugh at this, we couldn't get out of the door because we had to build it in what's called the drama room, because we used to go in the old fire station down the corner exchange yard to build most of it. And she asked us to build it, and we couldn't get out of the door. So
the fire station used to be near the...
Yeah, there was an old fire station down we still call it, I still call it the Corn Exchange Yard that goes down by the Corn Exchange where the soda down there. So it was down there.
So going down towards Langdon
Hall.
So in 1968, when you joined, you were in that Corn Exchange and you were helping with some of the scenery. Mm. Yeah. And so how did things develop from there with your involvement with the society?
I tried to get involved a little bit with lighting, but that was Terry and Les's little area, so I didn't really move on from there. So I think I did most of it, building sets and putting sets up and do a stage managing. I never moved on from there, but I used to make little innovative things, like they wanted some steps. There was a scene in something where the steps were in the semi-darkness and this girl had to walk down in a fog. And because I worked in chemistry, I brought home some solid carbon dioxide and made a device for making it get in the stairs. So that went down very well. And I remember one of the ladies down there saying, you've got a touch of your dad, working out how to do things. So that's basically what I did. So
Is there any one performance that sort of particularly stands out in your memory, or more than one, maybe?
No, I don't think there is, to be honest. No, I don't think there is. No, I think that I enjoyed lots of them. I used to enjoy the post-production parties as well. So, I mean, it was hard work doing the pantomime, because it was on, you know, you started putting the set together on a Saturday. On a Sunday, you'd have a tech rehearsal, full run through on Monday, then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then two performances on Saturday. It was a lot of work, but. Yes.
And then it was.
Then it was take it all down. And it was a bit. You felt a bit low after it because you were on a complete run, absolute complete run when you were doing it. So.
And what happened to all of that scenery?
I have no idea. Because I, when we started having our children in 82, I know Mum complained a bit about Dad not being there when we boys were younger. And when we started having children, I took a bit of a back seat with it. So,
yeah.
But I did contact them some years later about some lights, and they thought I was coming back, but I just wanted to borrow some lights for a show I was doing. So,
so it sounds as though the pantomime was quite the highlight of the year for the society.
For me it was. I mean, we did have some good plays, but. And I can't really remember many of them, but I just loved the pantomime.
What was it about the pantomime that you loved?
Well, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Pantomimes are silly, and there's lots of shouting and singing and things, and that's just what I really loved. I think because Dad was in the pantomimes, and that's where I remember Dad, he was tops in the pantomime, then that was a show I always remembered. So
it must be quite different when you're rehearsing for pantomime compared with your performance when you've got that audience participation. Mm. So what were the rehearsals like?
Well, Isabel ran a very tight ship, so people had to get it right, and she would. I think it was a teacher in her. You know, you're going to learn this phrase in this play, just like I'm teaching you something. And she was, but I think people go. I remember one girl walking off in tears a little bit, but she, and her mum consoled her, and she came back, and she didn't think she liked being told off, but she was brilliant. This girl, really good. So, but there were some funny things. So.
So was it quite a big society?
Oh yes, yeah.
Roughly how many people?
Oh, difficult to say. Okay. I wouldn't like to say. 50? I don't know.
Yeah.
The thing is, you had a lot of people who were there, like Frank Grant did all the props. So he really was a sort of a side. His wife and a daughter, Jane, often used to play the lead, and the men would do costumes, and Les would do the props. So he was a man who was on the outside sort of thing. He didn't really get involved in the show itself sort of thing. So there were people, quite a lot of people like that. Mm. So.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so you were building the actual scenery and painting it as well. So you had to be artistic.
Oh yeah. Well, a lot of it was some of us were artistic and some of us were. I mean, the thing is you build the flats and you've got to have a certain colour, a base colour, and then you've got to put thing on top. And somebody like Terry Powell, he had a very good skill for doing things like that. But obviously, a flat at a distance, the detail is not so critical, sort of thing.
So can you explain a bit more about what a flat is?
Well, it's each side of the stage. You have three vertical boards, so you can't see the side of the stage when you're looking from the front. So and they're at an angle, not flat, but an angle to way that way, mm-hmm. and they can be coloured in such a way that they move in with the background and the scenery coming down from the top. And the joy of them is, if you want to, when you change a scene, you can just take them out and turn them round.
Okay.
And then you've got a completely different scene sort of thing. So,
yes. So were you doing that manoeuvre?
Yeah, but you'd get the odd thing. One show, somebody turned the flats and it was the five. There were five the right way and the other one hadn't been turned right or something like that.
Okay. And so when you were painting those, you had to think about how they would work with the
lighting.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So you had to work.
So I have to say, Terry had a lot of knowledge on lighting because he worked in, and Les was good with lighting. Because you know all the gels are different colours. because these days it's all LED lighting, as you probably know, but we have to change all the gels, and you need like straw to bring out people's faces and things like that. So
what's a gel?
Well, in a theatre lighting, you've got floods, which are the lights which flood the stage, then you've got spots, which can spot a certain area, and then you've got colour wheels, so you've got a spot with probably six different colours in it, so you can then change the colour on the stage. When we reopened the Corn Exchange in, 78, was it, 79, after the refurb, the council wanted some lighting in there. They asked us for some advice, and they ended up buying the lights that we wanted anyway. Well, they needed them for visiting shows anyway. Mm-hmm. So they bought some floods that were up into the top of the theatre and these colour wheels, and so they were very useful. But you can completely change the look on the stage by changing the colour. So
yeah, without changing.
Without changing anything else. Yes, yeah. So.
So what were the trickiest things to create from the point of view of painting those flats and
For me, it was doing things like trees and things like that, because I'm not artistic. See, my wife came to Whitney to teach art and ceramics, and she sort of knew how to paint trees, and she used to laugh because she said, you know, she said, I shouldn't bother getting involved in that sort of thing. So I was one of the people that slapped on the base coat on each side of the once we met, because on the flats you have to put size on them to tighten them as well, because the canvas isn't tight enough. So you have to make them tight. So there's an awful lot of work in there, you see. Because my son works part-time in the Playhouse in Oxford, so he's involved in the theatre a bit. Okay. I think it must be in the genes, because he even got the job of doing an announcement for Alexis Sale, which Alexis Sale then used for his whole show. So this must be in the genes. Sorry, I'm going off. But I love that. But you can change that with the lighting. You can change so much. So, and the only trouble was it was so hot in those days, because you've got all those high filament bulbs you got up there, and no LEDs. It's so simple to do. So it's changed it completely. So.
Yes. Do you have a preference?
Funnily enough, I've got a friend who's a lighting. He's a cameraman for the BBC, and he works in lighting, and he says, I love LED lights because they're so cool, but I love the old gels, he said. So, and I've still got a gel book. You have a little book of all the different coloured gels, and you know which ones to order for different things. So.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay. I need to look at my notes now. Is there anything else you remember about Isabel Spencer? Was she involved in costumes as well?
She was, to a certain extent, yes. But I know we had quite a lot of ladies who were really... There was one called somebody Pobgy, that's right, and she was brilliant. Mm-hmm. They had so many costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic sort of thing. So,
were they made
from
scratch each time? Some
of them were made from scratch, some of them were... found and such like, because it's just incredible. I mean, I wasn't involved in it, but I once went to a party with a girlfriend, Tarts and Vickers, and I found all the clothes for her and I in the Drag Society store, because you know they had such amazing things.
Yeah.
But there were some bit slightly embarrassing ones. There was one girl in the Drag Society called Jill. And she said, I remember telling me, she said, I'll tell you a funny story and you don't know about it because you were backstage. She was with two other girls, and that the song, Three Little Maids Are We?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she was that. And she said, we were all dressed in Macs, sort of old Macs that do this thing. And then we had to take them off and come back on the stage dressed in dresses and sing something else. She says, And we had those dresses, the sort of ones that stick out like this, she said. And she says, I didn't know the front of it was up in the air. And she says, and my English teacher was in the front row. Which I thought, yeah. Because they say there were some lovely bits, because there was another one she did. There's a song from Half a Sixpence, If the Rain's Going to Fall. It's going to fall on Monday, Tuesday, anyway. And the girls had to sing The Rain's Going to Fall, and they'd come out from one flat singing Monday or Wednesday, any day but my day. And during the performance, Jill came all out on her own and said Wednesday. And of course, the audience thought it was part of the show. And it was lovely things like that. It really made it.
It sounds as though the pantomime was a bit of a highlight for Whitney itself.
Oh, it was, yeah. I mean, there was one time, it was so full up all the time, and it made our money. We had a meeting, and we had an afternoon and an evening performance, and in this meeting I said, why don't we have a morning performance at 10 o'clock to get people in? And then I think it was Terry Powell, I can't remember. We worked out that if we had a pensioners, they'd get a discount, and if they came as a group, they'd have a discount. Terry said, if you had a group of pensioners coming in the morning, give them a discount, we wouldn't be making any money, sort of thing. So we dropped it. But it really was so popular, you know, that people, all the tickets sold out, mm-hmm. sort of thing.
And so that was through the 70s,
wasn't yeah, it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there's a big tree by the old Oxfam shop, and Terry and I used to put a big pantomime poster up, like a really big board, really big with drama, you know. And the Whitney Gazette almost always photographed it and put it in the Whitney Gazette to advertise it, sort of thing. So yeah. I thought that was lovely. Yeah. And I thought that was nice because the community was involved, because it was part of the thing. So
I suppose really that was, for your social life, there were things that were going on at the Corn Exchange, like the pantomime. There was the cinema, wasn't there? There was the cinema.
Yeah, well, that came and later,
there was
yes.
The pub.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, to go out for the evening and
yeah.
something like that.
See, but what's sad to me is that the Corn Exchange doesn't have a stage anymore. Because, I mean, a town like Whitney ought to have a theatre, and friends have come and said, where's the theatre? I said, I haven't got one. Mm. It's a bit sad, really, but that's one of those things we have to live with, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But it was a bit of a dive, because at the back of the theatre, there was a door which went down into the basement where the boiler was. And you imagine the boiler was probably made in 1901 or something, and it was full of coal dust, and it was awful. I mean, that wasn't very nice in some respects. And when I was first involved there, the lighting was run from behind the stage, behind the flats, on the wall of the theatre. You had a platform, you went up a ladder, and you had these old dimmers, but you had to put a piece of wood across and move them all up and down together to get the lights to open.
While you were balancing on the ladder?
Yeah, well, there was a platform,
okay.
and it was so dangerous, my dad said, you know, you've got open terminals. And when they refurbished it, we had all the lighting from the back of the Corn Exchange, which was much better, much safer. But
and from the point of view of moving around that scenery, it sounds as though there wasn't a great deal of room
no, wasn't.
To manoeuvre.
Oh,
anything.
No.
So
no.
How did you?
Well, you were very, two of you were very careful, because you got the limited space of the actual width of the hall, and you wanted as much place to perform in. You needed the flats to be big enough, but small enough, if you see that, to fit round, sort of thing. But there was a funny incident, though. I was up on the lighting platform with Terry once, and we just taught the lights, and he pointed me down there, and there was a couple behind one of the flats snogging. There's quite a lot of that went on in the dramatic society, I think. It was a bit of a, yeah, so.
I'm sure.
So.
Okay, so you were involved really, well, through your dad, and then you joined 68, and then you were less involved as we went through the 80s,
is that right?
Yeah, okay. And do you have any involvement now?
No, none at all.
Do you go to the performances?
No, because I'll be honest, I miss the Corn Exchange. Not everybody likes a proscenium arch, but it's just something about it. Mm-hmm. It's like going to the Playhouse. I just love the old fashioned theatre. Because you know, we did, you know, we went in the Langdale Hall for some time when we were refurbishing. Mm-hmm. We had to get all these platforms built, and we had to put legs on them and screw them all together, and then build a proscenium arch out of hardboard. And that was hard work, but we got it done. So we spent a lot of money on it, but we did all right. So
yeah. So you were saying the Corn Exchange doesn't have a stage. Did it not have a stage back in the 60s? And
yeah, it always had a stage. Yeah, because what you had a stage. And say there was a basement, and there were rooms along the back, you know, for the stars. And then there was this place that went underneath for the boiler. But it was a bit old-fashioned sort of thing. But there was an interesting one, and it sums up my dad's approach to it. But in the 70s, when it was refurbished, and we started getting our own lamps, because we hired some of them. And Dad had built some floods. That's the ones up there and the ones on the floor. Mm-hmm. And he built them early in the late 40s or early 50s or something, because that's all they hadn't got any money. So they built them and put sort of flood bulbs in them. And I told Dad that we'd got some new lights, so we were going to take all those old floods down up there. And I said to him, I said, that'll be a hell of a job. They've been up there for decades and decades. And he said to me, you won't have any trouble taking them down. So I went up there. All right, it was dirty and sort of that. Mm-hmm. And I cleaned off the dirt, off the threads, and I put a spanner on it, and they came there as they'd been put up yesterday. I said to Dad, he says, RAF taught me that. He said, grease the threads before you put them on and put a pin through, and they'll always come undone. And I thought that was my dad's attention to detail, that they all came down. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Because you would think.
Well, yeah, because they'd been in an environment where they'd got cold and wet, damp, and so they'd gone rusty, and they'd have been a hell of a job to get down. And that's where I admire my dad, because my dad was a watchman, you see, a watch and clock repairer, like, you know, the repair shop. Mm-hmm. Well, he knew Steve Fletcher's dad, they were friends. So my dad was watch and clock repairer. So that's because he was an engineer during the war. So it was attention to detail was Dad's thing. Mm. You know, you do if you, and that's why I got into science, because attention to detail is you can't do it wrong. So.
So did he work for Steve Fletcher's?
No, they were just friends.
Right.
Steve Fletcher had a shop on the corner of Gloucester Place. In Whitney, you know, and up the left where the retirement housing is now, Mr. Bartlett's house was up there, and they had lots of industrial units, and Dad had a little business up there called Time Repairs, so good name for a watch and clock repair business.
So was that for kind of individuals, watches and clocks?
Oh Dad started off mending watches at home, you know, good old wind-up wristwatch, and he did them on a table like this with a cloth around him so he didn't lose a bit. And then as time went on, he ended up fixing church clocks. So he did Ducklington and Chadlington and Leafield, did all the church clocks there. So.
Oh,
and I learned an awful lot off him about that, about tolerances. So, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, because they've, I know they've got one of the old church clocks, I think I'm right, at Coombe Mill. In the little museum there. And there's a lot to it.
I went over there because back in the 90s I did a recording of Coombe Mill. Went out there with a little recorder like we're using it, and we entered it for a competition and came second about Coombe Mill. I remember seeing it there.
Okay, so is there anything else you want to share or you can remember?
There was one thing we mentioned earlier. When my wife came to Henry Box School, the thing about Isabel, because Isabel was a spinster, and when my wife came to teach in Henry Box in 1977, Isabel was very sort of friendly with us. She sort of make sure she was okay. And she rather took the unmarried female teachers under her wing to sort of make sure they were all right. And there was this lovely incident where my wife says she was warned off this man called Benny Potter because he'd been married twice before. And I thought it was really nice that Isabel did that, you know, sort of, because Amanda came to Whitney not knowing anybody. And then she got to know the drama teacher. But apart from that, she, you know, Isabel looked after her. So I thought that was a lovely, I always loved that about Isabel, that she,
And you didn't cross paths with Isabel when you were at home?
No, well, what was so funny was the drama teacher was called Wim Bray, who's still, he was our best man, at Henry Box. And Wim came, he studied drama and music at college, and he played the piano in some of our shows when we didn't have a band. Wynne had a, or Henry Box had a new drama room built up there. I mean, it's quite old now, sort of thing. And because Les wouldn't let me help with the lighting of Whitney Drama, I helped Wynne do his lights in the drama room because I had access to all the gels and such like. And I didn't realise that Wynne was very good friends with Amanda, my wife-to-be. And I could have met her. And of course, Isabel knew her as well. So it was really funny that our paths almost crossed before we met each other.
Yes,
so.
But not quite.
But not quite. Isn't life strange?
Yes, it is strange.
Yeah, so.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
But then, all came well in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
That's good.
Yeah, so.
Well, that's a lovely note to end on, I think.
Oh, right, thank you. Well, I've enjoyed.
Anything else?
No, I've enjoyed it. It's been
good.
Really good.
Good.
Thank you very much.
I've enjoyed hearing all about it.